yet have been unsuccessful. The purpose of today's news conference is to bring forward the voices of some of the people who have spent careers in law enforcement and who will be able to, the speakers will be Representative Rich O'Leary, retired Judge Phil Runyon, a statement from Rich Van Wickler, the superintendent of Cheshire Corrections, a statement by John Breckenridge, a former Ray Bilodeau, who is retired. Their comments will introduce themselves and their own background in law enforcement, starting with Representative Rich O'Leary.
My name is Richard O'Leary, and I spent 33 years at the Manchester Police Department, retiring as the Deputy Chief of the Investigative Unit. I worked at Westbridge Incorporated for 1 year, whose clients have had dual diagnosis of mental illness and substance abuse. I was also Assistant Director of the Hillsborough County Reentry Program for 3 years, helping individuals released from state prison transition back into society, helping them find jobs, housing, and needed services. I have a son, Brian, who is currently serving as a Manchester police officer. We do not need the death penalty to preserve public safety in New Hampshire. One of the most often cited claims about the death penalty is it deters murderers and therefore makes us safer. Over 200 studies to date fail to support this claim. Individuals that commit murders often do so under the influence of drugs, exacerbated by mental health issues, and without forethought. Those that do not plan murders never believe they'll be caught. Since we have not executed anyone since 1939, and since New Hampshire has one of the lowest murder rates in the country, the claim that death penalty is deterring anybody here is simply not credible. In southern states, that amount of over 80% of executions, and you will find the highest murder rates. Across the U.S., states without the death penalty, in fact, have the lowest murder rates. The truth is, the sentence of life in prison without parole, perhaps you could even call it death in prison, after spending decades in a 6x10 cell with your freedom forever gone, is a sentence that protects public safety and provides a harsh punishment. It also allows for the possibility of rehabilitation and redemption. Governor Sununu is telling us that his opposition to repeal the death penalty is based on his support for law enforcement. Given the facts that I've just outlined, I fail to see how spending over $5.5 million to date in a single death penalty case in any way supports our hard-working police officers in their day-to-day challenges. Here are some of the ways that we could use that money more effectively. First, fund treatment centers for drug and alcohol rehabilitation, actually helping individuals with substance and mental health issues. We greatly benefit the officers on the streets by treating the problem at the source. This has the added benefit of protecting the general public. Second, our court system is currently woefully understaffed and underfunded. The same goes for the Attorney General's office. This is widely known, but no one is doing anything about it. Can a government that is not supporting its judicial system claim to support law enforcement? Not credibly. Third, money could be directed to solve New Hampshire's 120 cold cases, which would help bring closure to all of those victim families' members. Our cold case unit simply cannot solve these murders with the current level of funding. Why should these families matter less? Fourth, our prisons are also understaffed and underfunded. Perhaps some of these funds that we are spending to kill a prisoner could instead be used to add staff, training, and education to our prison system. This would further the safety of our correctional officers and inmates within the system. Fifth, funds could be used to bolster police training in the area of firearms, search and seizure, conflict, de-escalation, and many others. These require regular ongoing training, but the money for these is really available. Finally, domestic violence and victim advocates that could, with victims' crimes, would benefit from more funding. Victim family members would also benefit through counseling and restitution for lost income where their loved ones are murdered. Regardless of what you believe about the death penalty, what does it say about us that we are willing to spend millions trying to execute a single perpetrator while at the same time doing so little for victims? Governor Sununu, these are some of the ways that you can show your support for law enforcement and enhance public safety at the same time. Ways that will make a difference on the ground with real people dealing with real challenges. I certainly believe that such actions would benefit my son currently with the Manchester Police Department. Governor Sununu, the New Hampshire State Senate, and House of Representatives have spoken clearly that they do not support the death penalty in New Hampshire. They've heard testimonies and are strong supporters of law enforcement, yet they voted to repeal the death penalty. I am respectfully asking that you not veto this bill and continue to support all of law enforcement in their mission through some of the concrete actions that I have outlined. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Representative.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bill McGonigal. For over 30 years, close to 37, I worked in the New Hampshire criminal justice system, the vast majority of that time in adult corrections. I served the last 8.5 years of my career as assistant commissioner for the New Hampshire Department of Corrections, and I oppose the death penalty. Sentencing in the American criminal justice system seeks to account and balance four expectations. One, can it provide for the safety and protect the community from the offender? Will it serve as a deterrent to other would-be offenders? Is it likely to provide opportunities for the offender to rehabilitate him or herself? And four, does the sentence meet the severity of the crime? In the context of capital murder, the issue of the sentence protecting the community is equally well served by life without parole as it is by an execution. If the professionals working in the Department of Corrections do their job well, and they do it remarkably well, the combination of proper classification of the offender and watchful supervision can and does protect the community. Deterrence is often cited in debates around the death penalty. It is true that if we put the offender to death, he or she would be deterred from committing future crimes against DOC staff or other inmates. It has been my experience, however, that most individuals sentenced to life without possibility of parole seek to find ways to make their lives predictable, routine, and safe. Those individuals who are found to be continually aggressive will be classified to maximum security. for the highest levels of control and supervision. Prisons are, by definition, dangerous and stressful places to work. New Hampshire DOC corrections officers are well trained to handle potentially violent inmates. And to my knowledge, no New Hampshire DOC corrections officer has ever been killed by an inmate. The prospects of providing opportunities for rehabilitation for individuals either on death row or serving a life sentence without parole may seem a fool's errand. Not so. Even those offenders who have committed the most serious and heinous crimes find ways to serve their prison community, some by living their lives quietly within the structured routine of prison life, others by counseling younger offenders towards meaningful programs, and others by seeking ways to give back to the community at large beyond the walls. Toys for Tots is one example. So the debate for me comes down to the question of, does it meet the severity of the crime? This debate often resides in one's personal and moral beliefs. Is it the right thing to do? My answer to that question is an emphatic no. The seeking of the death penalty, in my mind, is more about seeking vengeance than it is seeking justice. The facts of capital punishment include high costs, a lot of the things that Representative O'Leary talked about, but it also requires us to use untested drugs to put the condemned to death, frequently with agonizing and cruel results. Those New Hampshire DOC employees we charge with carrying out the killing will undoubtedly suffer PTSD, some haunted by it for life. Is my belief that state-authorized killing of one who kills is fundamentally wrong. I believe that no one is beyond redemption, and it is beyond the province of man to act as the final arbiter in any man's life. The New Hampshire legislature has spoken. SB 5593 has passed both the House and Senate. Governor Sununu, please respect these elected officials and the people they represent by allowing SB 593 to pass into law, either by actively signing it or just letting it pass into law. Thank you.
Our third speaker.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity of letting me come and speak today. My name is Paul Lutz, and I'm a retired police officer. I spent 30 years in the profession, retiring from the Derry, New Hampshire Police Department as a lieutenant. I began my career in the Salem Police Department for a short time before going to Derry. I have a son who is also a full-time police officer in the state of New Hampshire. So I have a horse in the race, so to speak. But I'm going to take a little bit different tack today than I have in the past when I've talked about this. The extraordinary cost financially associated with capital punishment has been conclusively proven, both statistically and anecdotally. And in the same way, it's been proven that capital punishment is no deterrent to murder. Both sides of the issue have acknowledged some version of those facts. As I've stated before in several occasions, if only a portion of that money spent on the prosecution of a capital case was distributed proportionately to law enforcement, the effect on both safety of the police as well as New Hampshire citizens would be much more effective and far-reaching. My comments are primarily directed towards the Honorable Governor Sununu and all those who, with best of intentions, believe that their their advocacy to retain the death penalty is in support of law enforcement. With respect to the governor's promised veto, while this is not necessarily associated with law enforcement, I feel it's important to note the notion that this is not a partisan issue. I've heard general opinion that the abolition of the death penalty is a position primarily embraced by those in a socially liberal camp. I can tell you, as a lifelong Republican, I can conclusively say that that is totally untrue. No position exists within the Republican Party that I'm aware that is inconsistent with advocating for the abolition of the death penalty. If anything, those Republicans who endorse right to life should be squarely on board with this position. With respect to those who favor the retention of the death penalty out of their concern for the safety of police, I say this. It makes much more sense to address the matters that have proven to affect police much more frequently. While the murder of a police officer is tragic, so are other factors that affect police both frequently and universally. Instead of focusing on the death penalty, the passage of enhanced penalties for unprovoked assaults on the police would be much more effective and a better place to start in protecting and supporting police. Instead of spending millions of dollars fighting the numerous appeals associated with prosecuting a capital case and its related appeals, acknowledging finance programs which treat issues that universally plague police, issues of suicide, divorce, PTSD, and other stress-related problems. The psychological threats to the lives of those engaged in this field are far greater than which is posed by an armed criminal. Instead of spending enormous amounts of money after the fact, spend it to preserve lives. Finally, the argument that capital punishment will give families of murdered officers some type of closure presupposes the positive outcomes of matters which have far too many of variables by nature. That a family would gain any type of closure assumes the successful prosecution, sentencing, and execution of a killer of an officer. You've heard how New Hampshire's version of the death penalty is very narrowly defined. That is marketed in a way that is said to minimize the pitfalls experienced by other states which have a version of a capital punishment. At nearly the same time, the state was prosecuting the killer of Officer Briggs. It was also prosecuting another capital case of murder, and it was murder for hire, a case of a despicable killer who orchestrated what could be termed a textbook case meeting all of the elements necessary for the imposition of the death penalty under our current statute. A more perfect and illustrative case couldn't have been created. For whatever reason, after a lengthy trial, the jury refused to return a sentence of death. This vividly shows the unpredictability and disparity within our narrowly defined law. With that in mind now, we need to ask ourselves a very real question. If two capital cases are brought before the court for murder and of two law enforcement officers, one is found guilty, executed, sentenced, executed, and for unexplainable, inexplicable reasons, the other is not, does that result in closure for the second family? Or does it create even yet another tragedy for the families of the loved ones of that officer? I think the answer to that should be obvious. The death penalty is bad for the citizens of New Hampshire as well as its law enforcement and corrections community. Let's turn our efforts towards protecting officers from incidents and persons which actually harm them every day. If those in favor of the death penalty are genuinely concerned about the lives of officers and their families, then offer real solutions and programs that are effective in assuring their health and safety, as well as preserving the quality of the relationships within those families. The death penalty succeeds in none of those. Thank you.
Before we take questions, I just want to call your attention to a couple comments that are in your pocket that really jumped out at me. One is from former Judge Runyon, who notes in his statement, he says, New Hampshire has the lowest murder rate in the country year in and year out. Why? Certainly not because of fear of the death penalty. He says, I submit it's because we have a well-educated, peace-loving, law-abiding population, and because we have a highly trained, well-respected local law enforcement officers whom we know personally and who treat us with respect in return. The bottom line is that we just don't need the death penalty as a weapon of law enforcement here, and abolishing it would have nothing to do with respecting and supporting our officers. I also want to commend to your attention the statement by former officer John Breckinridge, which makes a compelling case of his own personal journey that he went through after being with Michael Briggs in the alley at the time that Officer Briggs was shot, and how John Breckinridge came to oppose the death penalty and why he now believes that the state would be better off to abolish it. If you have any questions, please direct them to everyone and I'll help you, or direct them to the person you want to speak. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, there you go with the very first one, is that putting someone to death is a technical and logistical effort. You have to have a separate place where the gurney would be, where the offender would be strapped down in a separate place, with viewing centers for the general public, the family of the offender, and the family of the victim. And those have to be kept separate. You know, you don't want to have the family of the victim and the family of the offender mixing. It just doesn't work very well. And there has to be a separate place where officers that have the chemicals to deliver to the offender. So we need to build one, and we've seen that construction of facilities like that in other states have cost tens of millions of dollars. Okay, beyond that, there's the logistical issue around the chemicals used. You know, in the days of sodium thiopental and all of those that were extremely effective, now cannot be used in execution. The makers of those chemicals have decided that they won't vend those particular chemicals in use as an execution, and that's put departments of corrections into a real bind about what chemicals do they use and how can they access them legally. It's not really clear what chemicals would be actually legally applied. The chemicals that have been tried in other states, like I think it's Oklahoma and Ohio, a couple others, that have not worked very well, have created just gut-wrenching scenes of individuals who have gone on for a long time in extreme pain. You know, we assume that an execution is done so that the offender doesn't show any physical signs of the pain that he or she is in. That's so that basically so we don't upset the public. I advise you, if you're interested and have the guts go to YouTube and just put a search in for botched executions in the United States. Just watch one, and you'll be convinced that this is not a humane thing that we do. Well, I'm not speaking for the department. So
you experience that, I guess. As you said, this would be a major expense plus.
Yeah, it would be a major expense, and you know, we can't use physicians and nurses in the employ of the department to put the IVs in someone's arm to deliver the chemicals, whatever chemicals we're going to use. Some of the really horrific events have been of an officer or someone trained to put these IVs in, going straight through the vein and just putting the chemicals into the muscle. It doesn't work very well. So.
Okay. Other questions, Stephanie? Anyone? Well, great. Hearing none, thank you very much for coming. And together we will get a message to Governor Sununu and urge him to let SB 593 become law or to sign it enthusiastically. Thank you very much.